All right, everyone. Welcome back to the show. Dan Hafner here. I got another special guest I'll bring in here in a second. Today, we're going to talk a little bit about marketing. I like to have some people on here. I do say the show is a little bit about technology, business, and entrepreneurship and marketing, although I haven't really talked with a lot of cool people inside of marketing. Not if we have talked marketing, you're listening to the show. I'm not trying to diss you. But this is like all marketing. Like we've kind of brought in some different stuff with technology, business, and kind of mixed them all together in this melting pot per se. But today we're going to talk about making it rain, you know, just literally getting paid, marketing, putting your X factor message out there. It's gonna be really, really fun. So before I bring my guest in here, please like, rate, subscribe, download the show, share it with someone who you might find, who you think might find value with that. It really helps us with the algorithm wherever you're listening or watching, whether it's YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever the heck you are getting this content. We really appreciate that. So with that being said, I am on the line here with Daniel Den. He is the co-creator of this methodology called the X Factor Effect. He's a rainmaker. He'll probably show you if you're watching. He has a cool cup. He actually sent me in a box. It's really neat. It says Rainmaker on it. It's pretty dope. Pretty dope coffee mug, if I must say so myself. So how you doing, Daniel? Welcome to the show.
Hey, Dan Hafner. Thank you so much. So excited to be here on Tech Bites, ready to rock the mic with you. It's going to be amazing. We got between the two of us, and we were swapping stories before we went live. Man, we both have some battle wounds, right? We got some really cool stories to share over everything that happened over the past few years, and lots of cool marketing examples, especially marketing examples when it comes to SaaS and apps and all sorts of tech type stuff. So I'm super excited to be here. Thank you so much, Dan.
Yeah, no, it's been all, and you know, between the two of us also, we only have one first name. So
that's right.
We were talking about that before. He does go by Daniel, even though I go by Dan. So it's, we're very, very specific, guys. So don't mess it up here.
But legally on paper, it's D-A-N-I-E-L for the both of us.
Exactly. There you go. So, all right, Daniel. I'm gonna actually just start off with it right here. If you guys are watching, this is Daniel's book, Ideas That Influence. I will say I have not read the entire book. I'm about a third of the way through it. But I'll tell you the story of how I got my hands on this, which is awesome. But this is an awesome book you need to get your hands on, Ideas That Influence. It's really, really interesting. There's a lot of interesting ideas, at least that I've been able to consume so far. But let's start with this, Daniel, because what are ideas that influence? Like what the heck does that mean inside of the marketing, you know, conversation?
Yeah, ideas that influence, the whole book and the whole box experience that we send people, it's all about coming up with big, bold, and wildly successful marketing ideas that break through the noise. And the problem, Dan, is that we're all exposed, according to a recent Forbes article, we're exposed to about 4,000 to 10,000 different marketing pieces and ads and advertisements, like, and things like vying for our attention every single day. 4,000 to 10,000. So the problem is, how do we break through the noise and be that one thing today that stands out and that grabs the attention of our dream customers? And the book and the box experience and everything, it's all about coming up with these big, bold, sticky, and wildly successful marketing ideas that break through the noise. And when it comes to your app or whatever software that you're trying to push out there, it's how do we break through the noise with our advertisements, with our marketing, and show our dream customers, like, we are the app that you need to be downloading today. Like, how do we do that? And that, so that's what the whole book is about.
Yeah, no, that's a very, very good point. I've seen it time and time again. This is actually why, you know, years ago, I decided to expand the offerings that I had for people, because here's what I saw happen. There's a huge difference between having an awesome, awesome idea that never sees the light of day because you don't know how to market it. You could have the best, I mean, think, it doesn't even have to be apps. Like, you could think about, like, you know, a chamois that drives a car. Like, we think about the ShamWow type of stuff or whatever, you know, like, you could have a product that is far superior to something or anything out there on the market. But if you don't market it correctly, you don't position it correctly, you don't find a way to capture that attention, It never sees the light of day. No one cares. But you could also have, on the other side of that, you could have a crappy, terrible, barely functioning app or product or whatever it might be. But if you market it and you position it correctly, you can way outpace that other product. Like, isn't that crazy?
Oh, it's crazy, but it's the syndrome that a lot of us deal with. I like to call it, in our world, broke genius syndrome.
Oh,
the broke good. Genius syndrome is, well, you spent the past 5 to 10 years to have that breakout moment, right? You built this thing that was going to change the world. And theoretically, if people had it in their hands, it would change the world. The problem is nobody knows it exists, and you have no idea how to, like, yell loud enough and let people know that this amazing thing exists that you've spent the last 5 to 10 years developing. And so that's part of the problem. That's one big half of the problem. The other half of the problem is that when it comes to our products and services, sometimes we spend a lot of time developing and we fall into the trap of not creating those minimum viable products that we learn that we need to do, because sometimes what people need or what could change their lives isn't what people buy. And so at the end of the day, the economics behind your products have to pan out. And that's why minimum viable products are so important. We need to create something that's good enough where we can put amazing marketing behind it to see if that good enough thing is what people actually want to buy. Because at the end of the day, if you have a product or service that people aren't willing to pay money for, then the economics are never going to work and you're never going to change the world like we're hoping to change.
Yeah. And I wasn't actually going to go this direction, but this is really interesting, because everything you just explained is something that I actually just personally went through on my own. So I'll share this with you guys. And some of you have been listening to the most recent episode. You'll kind of be like, oh, here goes Dan again. Like I told you before we got on, like, I originally had built a running and fitness product for myself using no code, built it up, took off, had a really terrible business model behind it. I ended up shutting it down. Ever since then, moved into just agency freelancer type stuff of building those types of things, whatever. So now what I actually did was I said, okay, I've been doing this for people for a long time. I've been preaching the no code stuff. Like, this is what I want to do. And how, like, when it comes to that marketing, when it comes to, like, okay, we got the thing built, now let's go actually out there and market it and sell it and get people to pay for us. How hard is that actually to do? So I actually built, again, my own product, a SaaS directory type of thing in the taxidermy space. It's called Trophy Makers. And my idea was, like, hey, let's go out and let's go to some events. Let's go promote this thing. Let's put it out on social media. And let's try to position this in a way that will get signups and get sales. Long story short, kind of flopped on my face, to be honest. Like, it did not take off the way I wanted it to go. Now I'll spare you the entire story, but, you know,
I like the story. Share as many details as you want. It's a cool story.
Well, because it's interesting, you know, like, so in your opinion, maybe, I know you don't have all the details of everything, but, you know, how could I maybe have gone, let's just go down the SaaS route. Like, if I have a SaaS product, a software as a service product, what are some of the things that you've seen that are effective in making that buzz or that like, that demand, that scarcity, that urgency for those types of products?
Right. So there's a lot of different things. We helped a customer. I've got a few examples and we can, you know, uncover one step at a time. One of our customers that we helped, one of our clients down in Brazil, is they went the route of, I almost don't like bringing this up, because sometimes when people are like, oh, you talk about differentiation, you're just like the blue ocean guys. And we're like, actually, no, like, blue ocean is like one out of like 20 things that you could do to differentiate. But then at the same time, we do sometimes have a client that goes the blue ocean strategy. And so we have a client and he still co-owns the autoresponder lead levers. Now, if you haven't heard of lead levers, it's because lead levers is a MailChimp competitor and AWeber and all of them. It's a competitor.
Oh.
And he went the blue ocean route. He said, there isn't a really good autoresponder for the Brazilian market that is affordable for Brazilians. So he launched it. He launched a version of the site in Portuguese for the Brazilians and a site in English so that he could still sell the software worldwide. And it's an autoresponder. And he basically went the blue ocean strategy, made it super affordable for Brazilians. And that's what helped it grow like crazy. And that's what helped fund the business where he had enough money to go ahead and start selling it also worldwide. So maybe you use lead levers, maybe not. Maybe you've heard of it, maybe not. But it is a successful autoresponder that competed with MailChimp, AWeber, and all of them. And it did it through the blue ocean strategy. So one of the many ways we can differentiate and make sure that we're breaking through the noise is we can borrow sometimes a concept and say, hey, it worked in this niche. Let's try it in this niche. Other examples of breaking through the noise. Sometimes it's as funny as, and this goes down the minimum viable product route with your taxidermy, trophy, SaaS product. And yes, I don't know all the details, but sometimes there's something that we created where it allows us to fail forward and find the thing in the SaaS world and find that one feature, that one thing that is what people want. So the story that comes to mind is the Slack story. Do you know the story behind Slack and the game Glitch, I believe? Yeah, Glitch. Have you heard of the game?
I think so. It's been a while.
Yeah, it's a little known story, but amongst the sassy SaaS lovers, Glitch was a game. And man, did they pour their heart and souls into this game, and they like tried to make it amazing. And it had a very niche following, and it just failed to break through the noise. They were barely making enough money to keep the doors open, so they eventually shut down the game. And you know, if you look up Glitch, Glitch is a game that was somewhat popular amongst a niche following. And so they ended up shutting it down. They fired a bunch of people on their team. But during the development of Glitch, they had this messaging tool amongst their team, and they developed it amongst themselves because there wasn't a good messaging tool for their company. And it ended up working so well for them, and they loved it so much that when they started shutting down the company, they're like, wait a second, this one little thing that came out of failing forward with this Glitch game, this thing that we codenamed Slack, they codenamed it Slack amongst themselves while developing Glitch. They said, maybe there's something here. And they started sharing it with business owners for free that also needed messaging tools. And people were just like, this is the best company messaging tool we have ever used. This is amazing. And it was like one thing, one feature that was like the leftovers of Glitch. And that's what took off. And Slack is now worth over $7 billion. And with very little marketing, that's what they were able to come up with. And so sometimes failing forward with our MVPs, our minimum viable products, is like the thing, and like finding that one feature that like the market actually is willing to pay for. Sometimes like that is what ends up breaking through the noise. Now, I have additional examples. I've got like 5, 6, 7 more of like little things we can do in the SaaS world in order to like break through. But what are your thoughts on that so far, Dan?
Well, it's very interesting because that I'm also reminded of the Instagram story, which was kind of the same parallel that they put out something, bourbon. Yeah, that's what it was. Yeah. But then they realized that the actual sharing of photos was like the one feature that everyone used. And then they just were like, what if we just made an app that would just did that? And it was Instagram. You know what I mean? Bought for $1 billion. So that's really interesting. And yeah, so just as a personal note with that, you know, that is one thing that I learned with going through this. And I did find some additional, it was like this constant, people would come up to the desk, right? And I would test different ways of positioning this and seeing this. And I was like, hey, basically this is Google for taxidermists. And that's what I found. People were like, oh, I can understand that now. Mm-hmm. You know, when I was just like, hey, it's this cool directory that does this, this, that, and the other thing. People are like, huh? You know, but then I was like, hey, it's Google for taxidermists. And they're like, oh, that clicked. Like, it was like that one little messaging thing. I was like, oh, that resonates. Okay, cool. But I stumbled onto some different features and some different things that I think, you know, would actually be kind of, that would narrow it down, narrow its focus and stuff. So I'm working on that type of stuff. I'm not going to, you know, probably get into that here, but that was one thing, you know, exactly like I took away from that. But, you know, and another thing, as you were talking, it came to mind, TikTok, the story of like, how in the literal hell did something in a social media world that was just dominated by Facebook, by Instagram, by Snapchat, how did this app come out of nowhere and just come to dominate? I mean, it's like the most successful app of like all time, right? Like it's just absolutely took over and dominated, you know? And would you contribute, at least for your take on TikTok, would you say that it was the differentiation inside of the features with like the, you know, the reels, the doom scrolling, they call it. Was it maybe a tweaked algorithm? I know you don't have inside, you know, access to it or anything, but what about TikTok made it able to go into that type of red ocean infested environment and come out the king?
Yeah. Well, here's the thing about the whole X factor effect methodology. There are multiple differences that make a difference. And when we stack those differences one upon the other in the right way, then like sometimes we just hit a home run. We become that unicorn that like breaks through the noise. Now, first of all, TikTok is a great name. I mean, yeah. Like when it comes to sticky, memorable like names, like TikTok, it's just a great brand name. Second of all, now if anybody that was paying attention to what was getting the most views on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, Snapchat, all of it, it was people doing silly things in an entertaining way to music, like
in short bursts.
Yeah. It's like, I remember, on YouTube. So, long story short, I used to own a bounce house rental and party business, and I was nice. Kind of like a clown, and I would tie balloon animals, and it was a super successful business. Gave it up because it wasn't scalable. This was in my 20s. I'm 41 now. But one day we take the bounce house blower. Now, if you don't know how these inflatable bounce houses work, there's this blower and it constantly blows air into the bounce house. And that's how the bounce house maintains its shape, because it has a constant flow of air going through it. Now, these blowers are pretty powerful. Now, the video is pretty simple. My brother-in-law, he puts his face in front of the bounce house blower and he turns on the blower. And it blows his face in a super funny way. And he opens up his mouth and it blows his cheeks. And it's just like 10 seconds of like craziness, right? Well, the video did not get millions of views, but it did get about 70,000 views for like a 10 second clip. And this was on YouTube. And so if you go through like all the clips and everything like on YouTube, like it's this combination of, hey, there's music, there's people doing silly things, and there's people dancing, there's, you know, fail videos, and like TikTok, it just instantly became the place for, hey, 10 seconds of joy here, followed by another 10 seconds of joy, and then followed by another 10 seconds. And it's just the short form, like, you know, ADD, like what's next, like,
yeah,
perfect combination. When it comes to differentiating your business, sometimes people think, hey, I got to do like just one thing different. And sometimes if that one thing is dramatically different enough, like you're right, sometimes it can be like one big massive thing that made like all the difference. But then in a lot of times it's stackable differences. So great brand name, great concept, great algorithm, great this, great that. And all those differences stacked together just make you this unicorn that is just so desirable to your dream customers and different that it stands out amongst the competition. And it's not because of one reason. It's because of 10 amazing things that TikTok did right.
I love that, that it's like a stackable thing, you know, because I think, you know, and at least from my limited knowledge and in how I learned with the marketing world starting out, it was what sticks in my mind is when people were like, okay, when you're running a Facebook ad, let's say, for example, you never want to change your headline and your text and your image and everything all at once, because then if something all of a sudden works, you can't pinpoint what it is. So it almost gives this mindset of, okay, put something out there and then see what happens, and then test one thing and then see what happens, and then test one thing and see what happens, and then, you know, and kind of so on and so forth. And maybe there are places for that, but, you know, as you were telling that story with TikTok, here's what I took away from that, right? It's okay. They were paying attention to existing things that were happening inside of certain niches, inside of certain applications, ecosystems. And it was almost like reading between the lines of what was happening. And it wasn't just looking at things for what they are. It was seeing with different eyes of like, what's really going on here? What's the powerful things that are happening? And then take not only, because it, again, that's just feature level stuff of like, okay, this psychology works. This feature is awesome. This is cool. Okay, great. Like you said, anyone can kind of have that. But now how do you stack those differences on top of each other and then package those into a message, into an idea, into something that you can put out there into the world that just makes people like you said, the mouth thing. And they're like, oh, interesting. Like, it's like that head turning, scroll stopping thing. So tell us more about this, like, you know, like the X factor methodology, the stackable stuff, because that's really, really intriguing.
Yeah. So when it comes to the TikTok example, I mean, we talked about like a unique algorithm, you know, great brand and unique experience. So with the X factor effect methodology, there's multiple pillars that we teach. One of them is create ideas that influence, and that's what the book is all about. That's all about coming up with that big, bold, sticky, and wildly successful marketing message that breaks through the noise. But that's one thing. Experience is another. An easy way to talk about like the experiential aspect, especially since TikTok and so many other brands that we love, like Google and Apple and Amazon, they all have that experiential aspect. One of the things that I did with the book was I realized I wrote a great book and I knew it. Like, you get to the point when it comes to product creation where like, you know, something's going to work, but you don't know how well it's going to work. So I knew people are going to love this book. I wrote this book. It's amazing. But at the end of the day, it's still a book, and a book is a commodity because there's lots of marketing books out there. So am I going to just launch another marketing book, or am I going to follow our own teachings and do something different? And so what I did after having written the book, and yes, I split tested the title. I followed the whole Tim Ferriss 4-hour work week advice of split testing the title. I surveyed people like, what's the best title? Which one's the one you love? And Ideas That Influence was the winner. Same thing with the cover. I did 99 designs. I got like 70 submissions. Out of those 70 submissions, I picked my top 5. And I went out and I surveyed everybody. And then I whittled it down to my one. And then I modified the one until everybody was like, that is a great cover. I would definitely pick that up. I love that cover. So I had, like, I did as much as I could do right with a standard product. But then I added a level of differentiation onto it by creating a great experience. And that's where the whole box concept came into. And it comes with the 5 experiential envelopes that people open, and people go through it, and they have all these surprises and gifts and tools that they open to help them come up with even more ideas. And that is drastically different. But not only is it drastically different, it's drastically different in a way that my dream customer loves. And I tested it before finishing the creation of it through multiple ask campaigns and what you would call MVPs. Without it existing, I did survey lots of my current customers showed them pieces and tools and was like, this envelope's going to come with this. What do you think? And like, this is the design of the box and this is what's going to come in the box. And so a mix of MVPs and ask campaigns led me to people, whenever I would show them pictures of it, just absolutely saying, Daniel, this is absolutely incredible. Like, how did you come up with this? Well, the real answer was, I slowly came up with it by asking lots of people and knowing that people love a great experience. So one of those pillars is join the age of experience, add an experience to the product or service you sell. We live in the age of experience. People are tired of just stuff, but they're not tired of great experiences. So if you can add a great experience to whatever you sell, then it's one of our biggest and most loved ways of differentiating yourself. And SaaS companies do it all the time. They're always thinking about that experience.
Yeah. And I got to say, like, the box, I was able to experience the box and it's really, really cool. And if you got, we'll put the link in there for you guys if you want to experience it as well. So it comes with this book and it comes with, like you said, it kind of walks you through. It's got a whole bunch of other things. It's not just buying a book. It's buying this experience that walks you through it and everything. And this is actually really interesting. And I've never really expressed this on the show, but it's always kind of been an idea rattling around my head. So this is good to document because I've always seen this parallel between launching a SaaS or an app or a software platform and launching a book. Because like you said, there's so many parallels. Like if I encourage anyone to like, go look at how they market books, go look at like, just like what Daniel just said, right? Like, oh, I wanted to write this book and I knew it was going to be good, but how well was it going to do? Like the same thing happens with people who launch apps, right? You have this great idea. You have this awesome thing that you know could change this person's life or this business's future or whatever, but you don't really know it, you know, like how do you communicate what the value of it, the benefits of it, just like in a book, like the book, you can have a great title, but then once I buy it, I want to know like, what's the goods, man? Like what's in here that's going to like actually, you know what I mean? So go like, think about this, you guys that are listening, like think about the parallels between marketing and creating a book and software. It's very similar once you start to kind of like dive down this rabbit hole. It really is. It's kind of weird.
Yeah, it's true. I've got a few examples since, I mean, maybe this is like the big analogy of the whole podcast jam session is hey, like if you start to market your new app and test things before you launch, like people do with books, maybe that's like the winning combination. So there, like I have a few different, you know, examples. I mean, you probably talked about Netflix, but it's worth mentioning it again. I mean, Netflix, they went down the route of double market disruption when they took down Blockbuster. They weren't even trying. They just was a natural consequence of Blockbuster going out of business. But the market disruption first was based off of what customers wanted, which was what? No more late fees, right? So you got your disc in the mail and you got to keep it as long as you wanted. But if you wanted to rent another movie, you needed to send that disc back. So then you could rent another movie. And so you just paid the monthly fees. And so no more late fees, right? So that, like, Netflix, through market research and intuition of being customers of Blockbuster themselves, they knew that nobody likes the late fees. Blockbuster was like, what are you talking about? Our customers love paying us late fees. No, they don't.
They like collecting the late fees is what they like.
Blockbuster loved collecting the late fees, but the customers did not like paying the late fees. Yeah. So that was market disruption number one. And then level two was eventually the customers, and this is right around when Blockbuster started to go bankrupt, customers were like, wait, there's some movies like, sometimes I can just watch it on my computer. The streaming thing is starting to be a thing. I don't really want to go to the store as much anymore to pick up the movie. And that's when Netflix, with their double market disruption strategy, said, what are the customers asking for? Streaming. What do we need to crack the code to? Streaming. So what did they do? They cracked the code to streaming. And now, theoretically, Netflix realized that the like one of the last things customers want is unique content, and they're trying their darndest to invest all of this money in unique streaming content that people can't find anywhere else. And that is a differentiator. And but the only problem is you have companies like Disney doing the exact same thing. But Netflix realized that if they don't start acting like Disney and creating unique content, that people would not stick around. And the reason why Netflix is still strong, even though we're in the midst of all these streaming wars, is because Netflix started taking all of their capital and investing it in unique content that people could only get through Netflix. Disney does the same thing. You have content where you can only get it through Disney. And so, who are the behemoths? Netflix and Disney. What do they have in common? Content you can only get there, but not just one movie or two movies, lots of movies that you can only get on Netflix or Disney.
No, that makes a lot of sense. Okay, so I want to try to bring this like down a level, maybe, like instead of trying to be, I tend to do this on a lot of shows, I try to keep things as kind of as broad as possible to kind of apply this, but I want to see if maybe are you willing to coach me here for a second?
Sure. Yeah.
Coach. Okay. Because I think like this would be super useful for maybe anyone listening. That's, you know, maybe you're thinking about launching something. You already have an app or a software out there, a SaaS platform, struggling to get some traction with it. Don't really know how to position it and stuff. There's a lot of different things you could do. Like we said, we could go the Netflix route. We could go the TikTok route. There's all like, there's really no one size fits all, at least from what I've seen, right? Everything's in a different market, a different timing, different whatever. So let's take me for example. Let's just put my thing out there, and I'll be willing to hear what you have to say. So for my taxidermy,
hopefully it's good, Dan. I have no idea what's.
Well, hey, this is we're just gonna try this and see if this works.
We're gonna see.
Let's see if it works. So what are like? So for trophy makers, for the new platform that I've launched, right? At this point, right? I've launched it. It's live. It's out there. We've got users. We're getting some traction. We're going slow, but I haven't really. Again, it's kind of been like a side thing on the side for me, but there's a lot of different things I could do. I could go do partnerships. I could strip out some things. I could go put in new features. I could do a lot of different, there's a lot of different ways and avenues I could go. What might be the most high leverage, high impact things that I could work on at this point in time to start cutting through the noise and start really getting this thing out there? Like what would be those high leverage things?
Awesome. Yeah. Cause you want to move the needle, right? One of my favorite things that, I learned from Marlon Sanders way back in the day. And you're a Russell Brunson fan. Russell Brunson has actually mentioned this tidbit from him, is when you can take your, what your competitors have as a unique selling proposition and give it away for free as something else that you are offering, then you win. Or it's one of the ways to win. Like there's lots of ways to win. It's one of the ways. It's one of the ways to differentiate. And so one of the things that I might do is when it comes to the whole marketing aspect, you said, hey, you know, I went to these shows and I started to get people interested, and like, there's something there. Like they're like, people are like, oh, they're starting to get it. If what you created, what you developed comes as something that people are able to get for free when they pay for their taxidermy services. Okay. Mm-hmm. I went and I don't even know what the terminology G is. An 8-point, you know, deer. Well, you know the term.
You got it. That'll work. That'll
okay,
work.
There we go. It's beautiful, and you know the cost is, you know, I don't know, $3,000 in order to get this trophy up on my wall, but they do an amazing job. And then for free, I get access to, you know, the software and, you know, that this, and so that type of partnership, you know, that's the type of, you know, thinking that you can do. It's like, well, maybe I created something like so unique that it could be, you know, packaged and it could be used as a unique selling proposition that people sell with something else, and it helps boost their sales. And as a result, they're willing to pay me a percentage because they boost their sales. And so maybe you're getting a 5% cut of whatever they sell, but they're able to increase their prices by 15% because of this unique thing that you've included. Does that make sense?
It does. It does. That's a good idea. I will say, I don't want to shoot you down. I know that it's the weirdest industry I've ever seen in my life. They literally don't need any marketing help. It's crazy. they're swamped with work. Like, they literally start a business one day and then they're like, they have to turn away more work than they get. But that being said, I also think that there is again, this is part of why I went into the world and I kind of dove into it and I had no idea what to expect. And then I found that there's two of these really interesting offshoots to it. Again, kind of like the TikTok stuff, the Netflix stuff. There's a crazy, crazy world of competition. I mean, people work on one piece for years to enter into competition. I mean, they like obsessively like mount stuff. So like there's very, like, there's like a whole other world there. Like you said, you go out hunting one day, one year, and you shoot your deer and you go get it mounted. Okay, great. Might cost you $500-$600 from a guy or whatever. And then boom, off you go. Now there's guys that do this competitively for bragging rights, for, you know what I mean? So like there's this whole other world of competition in there, but then there's also this whole other world of schooling. So there's taxidermy schools where people can go and they'll pay to actually learn this stuff for a week. So there's some ideas percolating there of like, okay, like you said, we could say, hey, they sign up for the school, but they also get access to this really cool app that helps them build their business, that helps them do this other stuff. I got some AR and VR, augmented reality, virtual reality things, some kind of percolating. Nice. Yeah. So that, again, that falls inside of the schooling thing and stuff, but I wouldn't have known that. I would have no idea if I didn't just like stick my neck out and try something. You know what I mean?
If you didn't fail forward. And so now, and because your networking and partnerships, you could go to somebody that has enough knowledge and say, hey, let's create a taxidermy course, that, you know, $2,000 course or whatever it is. And then it's going to be like the thing. It's going to be like the coolest one because it also comes with all of these apps. And then you have this partnership where it's like, hey, schools is what sell. Let's open up a school. Let's open up courses. Let's have, you know, group mentoring or whatever it is. Yeah. And then they get the coolest software that nobody else has as well.
Interesting. Now
that, as you know, there's a lot of money in courses and coaching and all that sort of stuff, right? Yeah. So it's like the delivery. Sometimes the delivery of what we offer is like in how it's delivered. Sometimes that's the differentiator. And
just like your box. Just like your box, you know?
Exactly. Yep. I didn't even think about that. So it all comes back to how do you market your books?
Exactly. I mean, this has been really neat. Okay. So I'm going to put you on the spot again a little bit. I like doing this with people just because I get really cool answers. But we talked about TikTok a little bit. I know that's kind of been one of the dominating things in the news recently. But who else? Like, if I wanted to go out there on my own and just kind of watch what a company is doing, what an app is doing, what somebody's doing to market their book or whatever it might be.
Yeah.
Can you give us anyone specifically, person or business, that you're like, they're cutting through the noise. They have a good approach. Watch what they're doing. Do you have anybody you can recommend for that?
Yeah, I've got a simple example, and then I've got a fast example, simple, and then a more in-depth answer to that.
Okay.
So, this story, little known story, but when Google broke through the noise, it was because they got funding from Sequoia Capital. That was back in 1999.
Right.
They won the funding. Sequoia Capital was looking to fund other search engines as well, and they decided to fund Google. How did they do it? Well, Sergey Brin and Larry Page, they come up to Sequoia Capital, and their pitch involved them focusing their messaging on the fact that Google provides access to the world's information in one click. That was like the thing. Now, there were other search engines kind of saying that, but they didn't say it as clearly. What the trap that other search engines ran into where they were trying to say, hey, we provide all of this information. Like we're going to show you like the weather. We're going to show you like the daily, you know, shopping specials. And there's all these cool features. And there's like 10 things that this thing does. And Google says, no, we're going to like just say, hey, from a user experience aspect, like Google provides access to the world's information in just one click. And Sequoia said, that's it. Like, people just want the answer, right? And they want it fast. They want it efficiently. And Google they're saying that's what they do. So Google got the funding. Google ends up being the behemoth. And it goes down to marketing message. And that's part of, you know, what we cover inside of ideas that influence. So the messaging behind your SaaS matters. All right. Second story. ClickFunnels. I think we mentioned ClickFunnels earlier today. So ClickFunnels, what they did was twofold. They owned a word or phrase inside of their market. This is a super powerful way of doing things. What Russell Brunson did around the time when he was launching ClickFunnels is he realized that there wasn't anybody in the world that like owned the phrase funnels. And he was like, what if like we are like the funnel people? And what if all of the unique methodologies and everything with our messaging is all around like, here is the, you know, all of the best tips, tricks, and secrets and software for funnels. And now they have solidified that positioning so well that lots of times when people think of the word funnels and funnel marketing or building a funnel, they think of Russell Brunson and they think of ClickFunnels. And they partially did this inside of their messaging with their tagline, you are one funnel away. Like that's the thing that they repeat over and over again. Yeah. You are one funnel away, you are one funnel away, you are one funnel away. They are the funnel people. Now, do other people teach about funnels? Yes. Did Russell come up with the concept of funnels? No, but lots of people don't know that. He is so dominant as the funnel person, and ClickFunnels is so dominant with their positioning as the funnel people that lots of people don't know that Russell did not invent funnels. But in people's minds, he owns and ClickFunnels owns the word and phrase funnels.
Crazy.
So if you can do that, if you can pull that off, if you can be the only name in SaaS for taxidermy, and then it comes down to messaging. Like, how are we going to articulate this in a way? And that's where you were like, oh, we are the, you know, the Google for taxidermy, all things taxidermy. Okay, that's a start. Is that messaging sticky? Is it sticking in people's minds? Are people starting to repeat it? Okay, good. Can we take it even further? How can we advertise that more and more? How can we solidify that positioning that's what it is? Or does that messaging need to be tweaked? Does that messaging need to be tweaked so that it can be more sticky, more easily understandable, and more easily break through the noise? That's the shtick, right?
Yeah. Well, just real quick, the Google example is really awesome because I remember reading something about this recently around Steve Jobs. When he first introduced the iPod, it was 1,000 songs in your pocket. And it's like, boom, like enough said, mic drop. Like that's so clear. That's so just, again, it's easy to be understood. And you said something really powerful right there. Like it's in the minds, it's again, marketing a lot of times is perception, and it's winning that war in the mind of the person that you're actually trying to convince of something. Like you said, Russell didn't invent funnels, didn't invent the word funnels, but positioned ClickFunnels as, if you're trying to do a funnel, you go to ClickFunnels. You don't go to anywhere else. Like, that's it. Like, you go there, you know, and you don't have to. There's tons of other shoot offs that have, you know, happened with, you know, all kinds of different tools that pop up every single day. Same way in the no code space, there's new tools literally every single day, but there's certain names that are just out there saying, like, this is where you do this. We are, you know what I mean? And, but they have their own little shtick, like you said, on whatever they're doing. So
yeah.
Good funny stuff, story, man.
Behind the iPod, I bought an MP3 player, a black one, no name brand. I used it once, and then a few months later, this was right when iPod came out, right? Actually, it was the iPod. I don't know. It was the one that looked like a little stick, like things. I forget what it was called.
Oh, the Nano.
Yeah.
I had one of those. I remember that guy.
And then I finally get an iPod Nano. I believe that's the one. Yeah. And then I never used the no name black MP3 player. Again, the whole point of this story is MP3 players existed before iPod existed. Most people don't know that. Like, they're like, oh, Steve Jobs invented the MP3 player. No, he didn't. He was the first one that super popularized it. And it was through the messaging, 1,000 songs in your pocket. And then people are like, oh, that's why I got to get rid of the CD player.
And it was the customer experience. And it was the coolness of how you could turn it. And it was those two combinations. Like you said, it was that stackable thing of, hey, we're going to actually do this in a better messaging way, but we're also going to build a tool that's a lot cooler looking and sleeker looking than this like ugly whatever thing that you don't even know what's playing. You just have play, pause, next, and rewind. You don't even know the name. You don't even know what it, like, now I can see like the artwork and the title, and I can fast forward. I think those two things really just made that thing just like go. And don't ask me how I knew it was a Nano. Like, I have, my wife says that all the time. I have like such a weird memory. Like, I don't remember what we had for dinner yesterday, but like, I'll remember that stuff, you know?
You remember the important stuff.
I don't know if that's important or not.
Apple product names.
That's funny. All right, Daniel. Well, we're going to wrap it up here shortly. Do you have anything else that you want to add or talk about here as we wrap up?
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the main thing. Like, so, I mean, we say that different is the new better. Like, in your mind, in your dream customers' minds, like, they equate you being different with being better. It's just the way things are in today's world, because quality is expected. And so be different in the right way. And then when it comes to the marketing message, I mean, we didn't really hit on everything with ideas that influence. There's like 7 big concepts that we hit on inside of the book. And it's all about having that super clear messaging that has the power of breaking through the clutter, that 4 to 10,000, you know, ads, marketing pieces that your dream customers are exposed to every single day. Because the thing is, like, how do you be that one thing that people did remember? So Dan did not remember what he had for dinner last night. Out of all the ads that Dan saw, maybe he remembers one of them. When I ask people this, half the time they're like, yeah, I remember something, and sometimes I don't. And so that's the competition. That's the reality of advertising in today's world. Mm-hmm. Is like, we have to break through the noise and be like that one thing that people remember. So the book and the box experience is actually free. Surprise! It's free. What? On top of everything, it's
where can we pick that up, man? Where can we go to do that?
Yeah, it's free plus shipping. It's a free plus shipping funnel. Oh, it's a funnel.
I see what you did there.
There you go. Wait, who's the funnels? What's funnels? Anyway, it's free plus shipping. You just pay shipping and handling, and I send the whole book and the whole box out to you, and you can grab yours at bigideasbox.com. Big ideas with an S, bigideasbox.com. And you get the whole book and box experience, and you can come up with lots of really cool ideas for breaking through the noise with your SaaS and any other business that you're in. Because we were talking about this before we went live. Dan, you like now you've kind of niched down, which is another way of differentiating, right? And now it's everything's like Tech Bytes and super smart. You know, the first episode, one of the first episodes I listened to from Tech Bytes was actually a Run Your Day podcast episode. And I was like, oh, look at this. And guess what? In 2018, Dan was talking about the importance of differentiating your business and breaking through the noise. So if you go way back all the way to episode 13, Dan was talking about some of these concepts of the need to be different and breaking through the noise.
Was I on message? Was I talking about some good stuff then? Like I said, I have not listened to that episode in a while.
You actually did like a whole week of episodes just on differentiating your business. So it was like a mini course on differentiation. So it was pretty cool.
That's awesome. Well, I appreciate you bringing that back. Yeah, for anyone who's been listening the whole time, I have changed the name of this podcast several times, and I was actually told to do that because they said, don't start a new one, you already have this big bank and you're going to be ranked better. And it still does, it helps us get more, you know, reach and everything like that too. So so don't be afraid to pivot your podcast name or whatever you're doing after 200 episodes. That's what I did, so don't be afraid to do it.
If you think about it from the marketing aspect, so Run Your Day podcast, people loved those episodes, but at the same time it was generic. So what is Run Your Day podcast? Well, it could literally be anything. It could be about cooking for all I know. But Tech Bytes, all right.
You know what you're getting a little bit more.
All right. And then like with the subtitle and you're like, oh, we're talking about business and we're talking about, you know, SaaS and, you know, okay. All right. Yeah. This is what we're getting. And in today's world with all the noise, niching down is one of the things that we need to do as well in order to break through the noise. So
yeah,
that was a tangent.
No, that's good. That's good. I appreciate you bringing that up. Well, you guys can check that out. You know, like I said, there's a lot of episodes here. So if you go back, episode number 13, your X Factor, that'd be a really cool trip down memory lane for sure, man.
A great number for the X Factor.
It is. And you know, I would like to have you on back, you know, back on at some point in the future. And we could talk about, like you said, the X Factor process and kind of dive more into that. I know we didn't really have time to do all that, but we could be here all day talking about this stuff. I'm not into the 3-hour podcast like Rogan or anything yet. You know, maybe someday we'll get there, but
yeah, no, I get it too. I'm an ambivert, which is a mix between an extrovert and an introvert. So like I handle myself pretty well on these podcasts, but sometimes I get off of one and I'm like, okay, I got to take a nap, or I at least have to go for a walk.
That's the word for, I consider myself that too. So that's what it's called. We're ambiverts.
Yeah, ambiverts. It's a little known term. I think it's starting to become more and more popularized, the term. When I was at PodFest, they had little tags where you could like label yourself on your lanyard, and you could say that you were an extrovert, an introvert, or an ambivert. I was like, finally, like somebody's using this word ambivert, because I've known about this term for a really long time, because I used to take the extrovert introvert tests, and there was like three of them I took in a row, and it was like, you're an ambivert. And I was like, nobody says this word. Like, what do you mean I'm an ambivert? Like, I broke the quiz.
Yeah, I've never heard of that word. So I get it. That's interesting. Maybe throughout this entire episode, maybe that's the one thing that cuts through the noise, Dave.
The secrets of the ambivert.
That's funny. All right, well, we tied it up with a nice little bow right there then. Awesome. So that's very cool. All right, well, thank you so much, Daniel, for joining the show. It was really, really fun, really interesting, different conversation. So yeah, guys, check it out. Go to what is it again?
BigIdeasBox.com.
BigIdeasBox.com. That'll be in the show notes for you guys as well. It's really good, really good read. Like I said, I've not finished it, but it's really good so far. So definitely, definitely, definitely worth your time. All right, guys. Well, that is it for this show. Thank you again to Daniel. We'd love to have you on in the future to talk about this again, you know, down the line. Maybe once we get above the 400 threshold, we'll see. We're coming up on that here soon. So it's been a fun ride. So we'll see. All right. Well, thank you so much, Daniel. Again, thank you to everyone who tuned in and listened. Really appreciate it. Before you go, definitely make sure you hit that subscribe button, like button, share button, whatever the heck is there. That always helps the show. And we really, really appreciate that. So guys, that is all for this episode, and we'll see you in the next one.